I was today in the gym in this hotel, and the exercise equipment is powered by Linux. So it's pervasive. It's across every different industry. There's critical talent in India building consulting capabilities with the big SIs or systems integrators that then take that experience and make that accessible globally. Of course, those SIs are partners of Red Hat, and they build practices around our technology so they can take those learnings and best practices and sort of spread it globally. So many different ways in which we're connected to different aspects of critical parts of the economy here in India.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses, and of course, professionals who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies and ecstasies, and of course, the little joys of life and work. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Chris Wright, Chief Technology Officer and Senior Vice President of Global Engineering at Red Hat. He leads a team that guides Red Hat's technology vision, co-creates technologies, and collaboratively implements change to ensure the success of Red Hat's ecosystem of associates, customers, communities, and partners. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Chris. Delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you, Gaurav. It's really nice to be here.
Okay, Chris, you know, let's start off with something that is sweeping India at the moment, if I may say so. It's about digital public infrastructure, or DPI, and the most visible symbol of that is the Unified Payments Interface, UPI. And these are exemplary models of open source collaboration, if I may say so. I mean, sending money or receiving money is now just a matter of click of a button on your phone. And the change is not just financial, the change is not regulatory, the change is not transactional, not just transactional. The change, of course, is also behavioral and technological. How does Red Hat see its role in supporting and scaling such initiatives, Chris?
Well, first of all, it's an amazing privilege to be able to participate in these types of critical investments for India at large. If you think about the Red Hat view, which is broad and global, we take a lot of experience learning from open source communities through the participation of our engineering efforts, and then figuring out how we can best support the customers and partners that we're building solutions for with that technology in their context. And what's unique about this context with India is the sheer scale. First of all, UPI is globally unique in terms of its direct impact on the broad society of an entire nation, and then its sheer scale. So our role is bringing this amazing technology that's developed globally across a number of different open source projects, bringing that into a context that's stable, secure, performant, reliable, that can support this critical infrastructure for the nation of India, and then learning from that how to scale those solutions really to support population and a set of use cases that might stretch the technology in ways that we didn't initially imagine. So to me, it's a great example of collaboration and co-engineering.
Absolutely. You know, Chris, you know, what are the lessons that the world can take from this? Because we in India would like to believe that this is probably evolving into India's biggest fintech export to the rest of the world, just like yoga is India's strongest and most powerful and visible soft power export to the world. UPI and DPI could well be India's biggest fintech export to the rest of the world. You know, what lessons can other countries learn from this approach to open source driven digital infrastructure, which is public, and how can Red Hat facilitate knowledge sharing in such an initiative, Chris?
Yeah, I love that thinking. And the approach that India has taken is driven from open source technologies. And that itself is not necessarily the norm. Open source is pervasive, but it's not necessarily required when building, say, national infrastructure for a country. So I think that's one immediate example. We see that here and there in other countries around the world, but typically not at the scale of India. So bringing that idea of building something together and leveraging the broad skills of a global collaborative community and open source, and then applying it to critical infrastructure at scale, I think is the thing that India is showcasing. And then the way we can facilitate the knowledge sharing is we are a commercial entity. We do take that work that we do collaboratively in open source communities, turn that into products, and then deliver those to customers and partners and users around the world. Part of the knowledge sharing is in the best practices. How do you operate at scale? That's something that we learn here in India. Part of the knowledge sharing is through the technical implementation. So the work that we've done together in India informs upstream or community development activities that evolve the technology itself, making that technology accessible to other users in other parts of the globe for similar types of use cases. So partly it's the best practices themselves, partly it's the actual technology evolution, and then of course it's having the vision and foresight to leverage community development in a way to build some kind of sovereign infrastructure that is really aligned with these sort of global collaborative communities. I think it's a fantastic example of vision from India.
Yes, Chris. And also staying on that with Red Hat, can you share some success stories or some case studies, for instance, of Red Hat's collaboration with Indian startups, governments, or enterprises in developing open source solutions?
I think we have great examples in many different industries. So we work together with an ecosystem of partners to support Indian telecommunication service providers to build next generation networks. Think about the 5G network rollouts that are happening today in India. In each of the major carriers, we're a participant in enabling our partners or our customers to build this infrastructure, again, at scale. If you look at the different areas of banking, we're a part of the fabric of transactions, whether it's exchanges or consumer facing or banking or all of the different aspects of financial services. Red Hat is a component in helping build that, again, across many different parts of the Indian financial services industry. We're working with large-scale airlines. We're working with manufacturing companies here. And then also, probably an important way to look at this is not just what happens within India, but there's critical talent in India building consulting capabilities with the big SIs or systems integrators that then take that experience and make that accessible globally. Of course, those SIs are partners of Red Hat, and they build practices around our technology so they can take those learnings and best practices and sort of spread it globally. So many different ways in which we're connected to different aspects of critical parts of the economy here in India.
Yes, indeed. Let's change tack a bit and let's talk about something that is sweeping our lives currently all across the world, which is artificial intelligence. And it's changing our lives in the manner that probably was unimaginable until a couple of years ago. We probably also cannot foresee the kind of change it's going to bring about. But my question is not about the technological sweep. It's more about sustainability and the environmental impact that AI potentially can bring along. Specifically, I would like to know, as AI adoption grows, the hypothesis is that so does its environmental footprint. How can big tech companies such as yours, Red Hat, prioritize sustainability and reduce the carbon footprint?
Super important question. It is sort of interesting and even slightly ironic that today, many enterprise organizations or government organizations have long-term goals to reduce their carbon footprint, often focused on net zero, maybe in 10 years or 15 years or some time frame. And at the same time, this massive interest in power-hungry devices, GPUs, the accelerators behind AI, are finding their way into the data centers that we're trying to reduce the carbon footprint of. So it's an interesting conundrum. Even in some cases, people are looking at AI to provide intelligence to figure out how to reduce our carbon footprint. So our focus has been on building choice and flexibility around the underlying hardware infrastructure that supports AI. And in that context, we're looking at where we can leverage smaller language models that fit in smaller hardware footprints that can be both more cost efficient and power efficient to serve the use case rather than the very large data center wide, extremely large language models that we see have captured the world's imagination for the last couple of years. We're also looking at how we can leverage instrumentation and tooling to recognize the power consumption of any types of applications, including the AI applications. You can't improve something that you can't measure. So we're providing the measurement tools to create visibility into the power consumption of AI workloads so that we can then optimize those with our hardware partners to reduce the overall footprint of the AI workload. And then also looking at how we can leverage AI as a tool to bring better visibility into the overall footprint of an enterprise, carbon footprint of an enterprise, leveraging even combined public data. So we work in open source projects like OS Climate, which is focused on the broad view of how we can establish common metrics and common data sets to measure the footprint of an organization. So I think it's incumbent upon us to help our users maximize the value of this amazing tool, generative AI, but doing it responsibly in a way to minimize our carbon footprint. And there's many aspects to that. Some of it is software, some of it is the evolution of hardware, and some of it is those shared data sets and shared view of metrics.
Indeed, you know, data centers are indeed significant contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, and that's probably an undertold, underreported aspect of artificial intelligence. But my question is more specific and narrow focused. In your view, does the evidence suggest? Are open source solutions inherently more sustainable than proprietary ones? Why or why not, Chris?
Well, there's one interesting aspect of open source that is differentiated from proprietary solutions, which is the collaborative nature of the development. So if you imagine a scenario where each individual company needs to build their own proprietary AI solution versus a scenario where we can collaborate on a common solution, the collaborative model of building a common solution itself is just more cost effective and as a result, I would say energy or resource less impact on energy or resource consumption. But maybe another way to look at it is with open source tools, we're building infrastructure that allows us to distribute the workloads to the best locations. And those locations can be data centers that are near low carbon footprint energy sources as a service infrastructure for AI. And one way to manage that efficiently is to put that as a service infrastructure near a low carbon footprint energy source. And as long as we can reduce the latency and make sure the right bandwidth for connectivity is there to support that as a service model, and then ensure that we have the right data protections in place to make it safe to use that infrastructure, which are all projects that we're doing within open source communities, then I think we can really build this future infrastructure that's distributed. It may fit well within a national boundary and can take advantage of different energy sources, as well as reducing the overall energy consumption of any single server in this entire system. So a couple of different ways in which we're capable of helping from an open source perspective.
You know, Chris, one of the things about Red Hat is that it's collaboration with academia and research institutions, particularly in driving innovations. So now, how is it going? And can, if you can just elaborate with some little details on how this is driving innovation in emerging areas such as AI and blockchain, and also maybe quantum computing.
You bet. So we work with the source of innovation, whether that is an academic source or a commercial source. These things happen collaboratively in open source communities. Now, in the context of application development and application delivery, a lot of the challenges have been well understood in an academic context. It's more about a commercial context where we're doing this open source development to implement the right capabilities to build solutions that are useful for modern enterprises. That means there's less academic influence over the innovation and more industry influence over the innovation. In the context of AI, it's quite different. The AI algorithms, the core ideas, are being built today in academic communities. Academic communities themselves are collaborative. The scientific method and the scientific endeavor is generally a collaborative endeavor. So they map well to open source communities. And what we're doing today is seeing first a lot of the academic research being the forefront of AI research rather than industry-led community research for application development and deployment. And we're working together with those academic developers or researchers to translate that into open source community projects that can support this next generation, this next generation innovation directly connected to universities and directly connected to these research endeavors. So for example, one of our partnerships is in the US with Boston University, and Boston University has built a shared facility that is supported by open source software powered by Red Hat to do investigations and research around AI applied across multiple disciplines. This shared infrastructure is shared across multiple universities, and we're using that to understand how we can create impacts in, say, health sciences, better imaging and image recognition for diseases in the context of children and development, for example, something that we've done with Boston Children's Hospital. We're also working directly in partnership with IBM Research and MIT in developing language models themselves, and then the ability to tune language models with commercial private data to implement a solution that's unique to an enterprise, that solves a real challenge for the enterprise with their own data. That technology, that innovation, is coming in partnership between Red Hat, IBM Research, and MIT researchers. And what's amazing about that is it highlights the speed at which we can take an idea, which in this case, the InstructLab concept was born at the beginning of this year, effectively January 1st. That idea was translated into an academic paper that was produced in early March, which was then translated into software in an open source project called InstructLab, which we then demonstrated as a technology last May at the Red Hat Summit, which is our annual customer-facing event. And then in September, we produced a product that enables InstructLab as a generally available part of our portfolio, which means from an idea to an academic paper to an open source project to a commercial product all in 9 months. That's the speed of innovation that happens in AI, and it's how quickly open source communities can take academic research and translate that into something that's useful for the enterprise or for users.
Chris, you know, something that I always wanted to ask you is on the vendor lock-in, particularly in the context of technology choices. Now, how does Red Hat's open source approach enable customers to mitigate vendor lock-in and at the same time ensure long-term flexibility in their technology choices? What has been the evidence, particularly from India, so far as your vendors are concerned?
The way we approach this is first, that innovation engine that happens in the open source community is the way we do development. And if you look across many industries, you'll see what I would call de facto standardization around core technologies, technologies like Linux. I was today in the gym in this hotel, and the exercise equipment is powered by Linux. So it's pervasive. It's across every different industry. When we approach our customers with our Linux-based solution, we understand the value that we need to show them on a daily basis around the stability, the performance, the reliability of the product. But we also understand that the underlying solution is a shared solution built in a community context. So our customers have choice. They're leveraging our skills and expertise to utilize this technology. If we're not earning their business and helping them generate value, they always have the choice to take their applications, which run ultimately on Linux or another de facto standard community project would be Kubernetes for distributed infrastructure, where we deliver OpenShift as our core product. In these cases, these are industry de facto standards. Industry aligns around these core standards, and we strive to earn our customers' business every day, but we always are enabling them to choose. And they're leveraging the core technology, whether it's Linux or Kubernetes or Ansible for automation. But if they're not pleased with the service we're giving them, they have the flexibility to take their infrastructure and either deliver it themselves or find another source of support for that same infrastructure. So I think it provides real flexibility and then demands a level of value creation, value commitment between us as a supplier and our customers that is interesting and unique.
Chris, finally, you know, circling back to India, and we'll end this with this question, is just to understand your views. What is the kind of advice you would give to Indian policymakers and entrepreneurs who are seeking to replicate the success and the scale of UPI and DPI in other sectors, Chris?
I think it starts with having a clear problem in mind. One of the challenges with technology is technologists are predisposed to focusing on the solution without necessarily identifying the actual problem we're trying to solve. And the reason that's so important is without a shared vision, it's difficult to collaborate. So having a shared vision of the problem statement, which I think UPI is and DPI is a great example of, is the beginning. And then building an expectation that the source of the solution is developed through open source technologies kind of hints at the direction of the solution without being focused only on what is the solution. Let's let communities and industries come together to define the best solution to the problem domain. And in that context, you know, I think what India has done is showcasing partnership between public, private, and even community development efforts in a way that's interesting and unique. I also think that the regulatory compliance around safety for AI or security concerns for application, there's also a public-private partnership that's critical there that I think mirrors some of the UPI, DPI infrastructure investments. So we need to understand how we can best deliver infrastructure tools, solutions to real problems in ways that don't, you know, introduce societal challenges like insecure cyber systems, and with a focus on enabling, leveraging open source technologies, I think we create democratized access to all of this infrastructure in a way that really protects the long-term view of society. So I love the example, and I think it's I think there's a lot we can learn from that and apply it in other domains.
Absolutely, Chris. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us and sharing your deep insights and perspectives on a range of issues from artificial intelligence to sustainability of open source and the environmental impact of data centers and the scale and impact of India's very own UPI and DPI. Thank you so much, Chris, for this.
Thank you for having me. What a wonderful conversation.